Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. Thank you for tuning in. We appreciate you hanging out with us for the afternoon, that's for sure. Joining me by phone, Bill Londrigan, president of the Kentucky AFL-CIO. Bill, welcome back.
Hey, Charles. Great to be here. Hope you're having a great day.
Bill, always. It's a pleasure to have you with us. We appreciate it. You know, it seems like it's a never-ending story down in Kentucky. First, you get people coming down there, carpetbagging into the state, throwing money all around the state legislature, saying, hey, you know, we got to bring right to work county by county. And now they're coming in and they're getting ready to throw money all over the place, this time into advertisements. What's going on?
Oh, Charles, you hit the nail on the head. Outside group, you know, so-called Americans for Prosperity, which is just a laugh in itself because this is a Koch brothers backed group.
We love rich people.
Well, they love themselves, I think, Charles.
Yeah.
And, you know, when guys, when they've got $100 billion and they're pledged to spend $90 million in the next election cycle, you know, there's a problem here in this country with how campaign finance laws have gotten so crazy and out of whack to allow, you know, people to try and buy the political system with their enormous wealth. And here in Kentucky, we have a governor's race, of course, and the Republican candidate, Matt Bevin, is going to be the beneficiary of the Koch brothers' efforts here to spend money on the media and do direct mail. And they even say they're going to knock on doors, kind of like what we do in the union movement, Charles. And
right.
They're going to run ads against Jack Conway, the Democrat candidate, over what they call Obamacare and what we call here in Kentucky Connect, a wildly successful version of the federal health care, the Affordable Care Act. And Charles, the statistics are startling on the whole success of it. And now the American is for Prosperity for plutocrats is going to come in and try to propagandize people into thinking that they should give, you know, their health care back. The 400, 500,000 people that have gotten health care that didn't have it before here in Kentucky, the enormous success of how this health care system's been implemented, how many people have gotten access to health care, and what the outcomes are showing to be. We have this group coming in, going to spend huge dollars on the media and tie the Democrat candidate, Jack Conway, as I said, to Obamacare, which is a code word, I guess. And really, Charles, you know, the whole thing is ludicrous in that, you know, an outside group, you know, come in, start spending money for a candidate to knock down the other candidate for a program that's been so successful to help so many people. But it really fits in with the message that the Republican candidate Matt Bevin was talking about, which is that, you know, he was going to do away with the entire system when he got elected. That was one of his first things. He said if elected, he would immediately end the expanded Medicaid qualifications and transfer Obamacare enrollees to federal exchange. So he's got no real plan. Basically, just throw all the people that got health care out into the streets again. And the Americans for Prosperity for plutocrats, of course, is you know, supporting that whole vision of health care. Their wacky stuff says something about you know, the free market and letting the consumers decide and all this other crazy stuff. Solutions.
Bill, I think the consumers in Kentucky did decide, and they decided Connects.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
you know?
They decided on a system that you know, treats people fairly, that takes you know, pre-existing conditions off the table, all the basic elements that were excluding and preventing people from having access to affordable health care. And that's, you know, it's about affordability, Charles. It's about, you know, people that don't have the financial wherewithal to have this basic right to health care. And then on the other side, we have a group that says that, no, they should let the market. Well, the market decided a long time ago, and you said recently it did when they got on it. But for years, the market decided before, and that was to exclude mass quantity, right. mass numbers of people from access to affordable care. And the cost for the system, of course, skyrocketed year after year after year. And now we see some impact on that with the healthcare costs going down in a significant way. And we got groups out here trying to convince people that, you know, yellow is green and, you know, up is down. I mean, it's amazing. But, you know, the power of their media and the money that they have has a tendency to try and fool people and do it in a way that has an effect. So
right.
It's part of the whole game that goes on now, and unfortunately folks get sucked into it.
You know, and it's funny, Bill, because you had mentioned they're going to get door knockers. And, you know, you're absolutely right. That door knockers, people going out and talking to the constituents in their community and their family, has long been one of labor's strengths. I have seen the opposite. I've seen Republican door knockers, the paid ones. Mm-hmm. And that's what these Americans for Prosperity is talking about, is paid door knockers. Man, it's I've trained door knockers, and that's the recruit that you don't want. You know,
and that's a good point. And Charles, we've seen this year. They've actually played in some earlier campaigns here in Kentucky, and I can tell you that, you know, the folks that they send out aren't those folks that would be willing to engage in an honest discussion with a person at their house or at their front door that may be on the Connect program. Most of the time what they're doing is they're hanging a little, something to hang on the door, a piece of literature, and then just, leaving out and not having a discussion at all. I think they'll find that when they start knocking on doors, if they actually try to engage in a discussion with folks, I think most of them here are knowledgeable enough or know people or are themselves beneficiaries of the Connect program, that their effort is going to fall on deaf ears. I believe that's going to be the case because, you know, all across the state, we only have about 4 million people here in Kentucky. This isn't, like the big northeastern state where we've got 20 million people. We got 500,000 of them on health care, affordable care that they didn't have before. So that means a lot of people in Kentucky know somebody, has a relative, a friend, a person that they go to church with, somebody they know that has now gotten health care that didn't have it before. And they recognize that that is a positive for them, the people that got it, as well as for their entire community. So I don't believe that this is going to work for them. And I think when it's exposed who exactly backs this effort, when folks get to understand that this is about billionaires trying to impose, you know, their silly notion of healthcare, what's right for Kentuckians, on the people here, I think it's just going to backfire on them, and I believe that's going to be the case. And I don't see how it could work any other way when folks here in Kentucky are satisfied or more than satisfied with the fact that they've gotten access to affordable healthcare on a massive scale than they ever would have envisioned.
Yeah, you know, this is just people tossing red meat out there. But what's going to happen is this is going to backfire, because the people who are on Connects or the people that know people that are on Connects and even small business owners, because the last time I looked at that Connects website, it was something like 1,300 business owners had bought into the program on behalf of their employees. You talk a couple thousand here, a couple thousand there, and all of a sudden this is adding up people.
Well, and Charles, as you recognize that is one of the more difficult, employment groups or people to cover, because they don't typically have, you know, massive amounts of employees where they can, spread the cost. It had been traditionally more difficult for the small employers to, you know, make sure that their employees, whether they got it through Connect or one other means, were able to get their folks covered. So, you know, it's a plus. The hospitals are talking about lower costs, something that we haven't heard in a long time. And, you know, it's, and people are, going to doctors that they had never gone to before. And it's just been, you know, something good for people as individuals, as well as for, you know, our system, so to speak.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, listen, Bill, we're going to take a short break. We'll come back. We'll talk some more, okay?
Great. Thanks, Charles.
I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio.
It was the spring of 1977. Four friends put up $800 apiece to start a screen printing shop to serve local businesses, anybody that wanted their logo to be seen on a t-shirt. One day they happened to call on a local union hall, where the business agent asked, "Are you guys a union shop?" Well, that same day they joined the Painters Union, committing themselves to doing the right thing. Today, Image Point is proudly American-made and union-made. They serve unions coast to coast with printed t-shirts, hats, and jackets, and hundreds of custom imprinted promotional items. Tell your business agent or local president, orders start as low as 36 items. The company is called Image Point. Check out their 100-page color catalog of printed wearables and promotional items. It's available right now when you visit imagepoint.com. That's image, P-O-I-N-T-E.com. Mention this ad and get a 10% discount.
Is America truly the land of the free when working families have to struggle to survive? Are workers free to achieve the American dream?
The Teamsters Union is North America's strongest union. We fight for our 1.4 million members and all of America's working families. Teamsters are fighting for the rights of the middle class in Washington, in state capitals, in city councils, and most important, in the workplace. Join us in the fight to keep the American dream alive.
Connect with the Teamsters Union at Teamster.org, Facebook, and Twitter.
I make learning a privilege, not a chore. And frustration, a tool, not an obstacle. I'm a teacher. I make more.
Make more. Teach. Visit teach.org. Brought to you by Teach and the Ad Council.
They'll challenge your authority, because that's what kids do. But this car is your territory. And in here, your word is law. So when you say you won't move until everyone's buckled up, you won't budge an inch. Until you hear that click. Never give up until they buckle up. A message from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council. For more information, visit safercar.gov/kidsbuckleup.
Driving has a rhythm all its own. Don't wreck it with a text. Before you get behind the wheel, silence your phone. Or better yet, designate a texter. For more text-free driving tips, visit stoptextstopwrecks.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
It's about the work. Work we're proud of. Work that provides the energy that powers America. Work that means our communities are stronger, better, for our families, our neighbors, for everyone. Just like you, members of the United Mine Workers of America are on the job, every day, working hard. It's what we do, and it makes America a better place. The United Mine Workers of America, working families just like yours.
Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. Thank you for tuning in. We appreciate you hanging out with us for the afternoon. We enjoy your company. Speaking of enjoying company, on the line with us today, we've got Bill Lundergan, president of the Kentucky AFL-CIO. Bill, welcome back.
Hey, thanks, Charles.
Bill, it's always a pleasure. You know, Bill, it seems to me that, you know, and you understand it as well as anybody I know. It's not just us in labor that have to get involved in this. It's everybody, and we have to communicate with labor, and that's, you know, why we're on in the air in Kentucky, and it's a wonderful thing. The education process, I mean, Bill, if you had to pick one or two topics that you wanted to get out to the average person in Kentucky, and I'm not talking just union people, I'm talking about all working people, because they get it. They've got the same issues as labor people do. What are those one or two topics that you would want them to know about?
Well, Charles, I think the first one is one is extremely important that affects folks that are at the lower end, we'll say, of the wage scale. It's the minimum wage, increasing the minimum wage, Charles. That has such a huge impact across the board on people's ability to put food on the table and to get out of poverty than any single other item. The other one, of course, is the earned income tax credit. But the minimum wage increase is critical, Charles, and you know it will affect so many people. You know, we've just recently had the ruling about overtime and how that's going to affect several million people. Well, mm-hmm. across the board, increases in minimum wage, you know, far out exceeds the number of folks that'll be, you know, affected. Not to denigrate that effort, but the whole idea is that more people will have more money to spend. And you know, Charles, when we've discussed this issue with various groups, or whether it's the you know, local city councils, or whether it's at the state level, it's part of the discussion is, hey, this society that we live in, this economy, is based on consumer spending. You know, that's the key issue that really determines mm-hmm. whether or not we're going to have, you know, a successful or growing economy. And, you know, when people have more money in their pocket, they're going to spend more. And we already know that when people at the lower end of the income scale get an increase, they're spending that more in the local economy. That's a fact. And, you know, that helps everybody. That helps those markets in the local area. It just generates, you know, fivefold out there in the community. And I tell you, you know, that to me is just a critical issue. And the lines between the proponents of it and the opponents is you know, drawn in the sand. And, you know, our governor candidate for here, the Matt Bevin, the Republican candidate, he said it at some point here, well, he jumps around a lot, but one of his statements was that he doesn't even think a federal minimum wage is constitutional. So that's the kind of crazy thinking that's, you know, going on in that issue alone.
Yeah,
but as far as people supporting it, it's a wildly, you know, highly polling issue. People are, you know, in agreement. Well, 60-65% in that range think there should be an increase in the minimum wage. And, you know, as you know, Charles, the states aren't doing it that much. Some of them are. The federal government, of course, is at the codlock on it. And, you know, local communities around the country have been doing it and making a difference on in people's lives.
Right. And Bill, you know, the people that decry raising the minimum wage, you know, it's funny as heck. We were talking about this earlier today. The very restaurant owners in Seattle, Washington, they were complaining about the $15 an hour wage. The very same ones that were saying that we're going to be run out of business because of this are now opening up new restaurants because they can't keep up with the demand. Now, I mean, look, I get it and I understand, but, you know, at some point in time, and I know these people have been taught since they were young men and women that, oh, unions and wages are bad. Okay.
Right.
But at some time or another, they got to get a grip that, oh, geez, those kids down at McDonald's or those people down at McDonald's, they're making more money. And now they're coming to my restaurant or they're coming to my business or they're asking me to do things for them. And you would
Charles,
think.
It's unbelievable because the facts and the experience has been, you know, the exact opposite of what the opponents have said that it's going to be. You mentioned the example of Seattle. San Jose, California is another great example. You know, that issue they throw out almost all the time is it's going to cost jobs. There will be less employment for workers if minimum wage increases. They're going to get laid off and such. And the exact opposite happened in San Jose in one example. You know, new jobs created in a large quantity that, you know, were benefiting from the minimum wage. You know, these things are, you know, it's amazing how the other side spins it to the complete opposite of what the reality turns out to be or the experience that we already had with it. And it's really unfortunate. And you mentioned restaurants. Here in Kentucky, a restaurateur in northern Kentucky opened a new restaurant And he had another one, and he changed them all over to $15 an hour and no tips and such. And he's maintaining all of his employees now. The turnover's gone down, you know, so much that he's, you know, making more money. You know,
we saw the same thing with our friends with Moo Cluck Moo up in Detroit. They started off with one storefront. They got some good people hired on. They took advantage. They empowered their people. They supported them. $15 an hour, and this would happen a couple of years ago. I am absolutely sure, and I'm going to check. I'm going to find out, but I am absolutely sure that the same people that started that restaurant are still working there, making good money. And you know, I got to say that this is just absolutely incredible that anybody with a sense, with all the information that's out there, would still say, oh, well, $15 an hour, that's just an entitlement. They don't need it. They're teenagers, all this silliness. I mean,
right?
You know, well, somewhere the light's got to come on.
Yeah, Charles, and you wish it would come on sooner and brighter. but look, yeah. the whole idea, you know, is that philosophical, difference between folks that think that large corporations should make billions of dollars in profits and the workers should be paid as little as possible. I mean, that's kind of where we're at here. You know, look at, McDonald's or any other big fast food chains. And, you know, their profits are unreal. They have been for a long time. And, you know, we're not begrudging them the profit, but we're also asking for the folks that are making the profits for the corporation to be treated a little bit more fairly,
right,
and be given the opportunity to have a fair wage that provides them with a good standard of living. We're not supposed to be, you know, promoting an economy where workers have to struggle to get by day to day and have more than one job or work ridiculous hours and never see their children. That's kind of the whole mess that we've got ourselves into here, is that, you know, we've got lots of low-wage workers making low wages and having to work harder over the long haul and work more hours and then not have enough time to do the things that we say we're supposed to be doing, which is educating our children and, you know, making sure that they have good food to eat and things like this. And you would think these corporations with these great images would start saying, oh, gee whiz, maybe that's an altruistic or a positive thing for us to do. And in fact, Charles, this has happened. I must say that, you know, there have been instances of Walmart even did it to Target, you know, to some, you know, effort to try and quell the rising tide of disdain for corporations that exploit their workers to a great degree. Some of them have been, you know, slowly and, you know, changing their wage structures, of course, you know, taking some people out and putting some in. But the point of the matter is that if we paid people more money, they'd have more money to spend in those stores. And I would think that the economy in general would be benefiting from that whole approach. Instead, we got this, you know, war on workers, which envisions, you know, exploiting people to the maximum for maximum profit and no middle ground. You know, it's crazy. And, you know, years passed and decades passed, there was a middle ground. There was a notion that if, you know, labor got their due and a fair share, the corporations would make money, the workers would have a good standard of living, be able to purchase products, and the government would be there to, you know, intervene and make sure that everybody was, like, doing the right thing and treating each other with respect. But that's not the way it works now.
Yeah.
You know, almost every job and every occupation, it appears, is under the gun some way or another, Charles, in terms of ratcheting down their livelihoods.
Absolutely, Bill. But you know what? We got to stay on top of it, and we got to keep pushing for the little guy out there. And trust me, the American public gets it. They understand. That's why 60% of the population are in favor of labor unions. 70% of the population say they would join a union if they had the availability in their workplace today. So, you know, we got to stay on message. We got a big tent. Everybody's welcome. And speaking of everybody being welcome, how do we find out more about the Kentucky AFL-CIO?
Oh, you go to our website, Charles, at www.kyafl-cio.org or Facebook at kyafl-cio.
There we go, Bill. It's always a pleasure. We appreciate it, and we'll talk to you again soon, okay? I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio.